This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today I have with me
Sue Sterling.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Sue, you've been writing some local history.
I wrote a couple of little books. The first one was Awatapu College, and that was because I'd worked there for many years and I'd set up the archives there. And I felt all these things stuck away in boxes weren't much use, so they needed a history. And then when I finished that...
In this sort of history before?
I guess my training was the PhD I'd done in the early
2000s. Oh,
okay. Yeah. So I'd written a thesis on field trips in New Zealand, geography field trips. And I'd interviewed lots of people, lots of teachers, lots of lecturers, 60 in all. And that's something that I've sort of realised you have to do if you haven't got a lot of written information to write history. So I got a kind of method, and I've always been a social scientist. I've always taught social studies, geography, history, so I knew a fair bit about...
So you were teaching at Awatapu College and they said, will you handle the archives?
Yeah, well, it was a bit of a strange one, really. I got a job as a teacher librarian as well as being head of geography.
Oh, okay.
Because at school you just do everything, you don't just do one job. And I just got into my little office, the first time I'd ever had a little office, so it was quite exciting, all these cupboards. And behind me there was a cupboard, and it took me a few weeks to even bother to look and see what was in it, because I had so much to do. And all these boxes, and so I asked somebody, what's that? Oh, that's the archives. These are just random cardboard boxes. You know, it might have had Weet-Bix in them or something.
So there was no organised collection. No. It was just, what should we do with this? Stick it in the archive.
Yeah. But the guy who'd done this before me was an amazing collector. So there was actually quite a lot of stuff. And he was also somebody that everybody liked, so they were very happy to give him things.
So what sort of things would they put in a school archive?
There'd be results of maybe the swim sports, a lot of photos, mainly photos, actually. Yeah. And in those days, it was mainly the photos of the first 11 or the first 15, that type of photo, or maybe class photos. But all muddled up, and sometimes you didn't really know what they were, some of the things. Not really student work, not that kind of thing. That doesn't seem to be
newsletters
kept. a huge number of newsletters, and of course the school magazines, and they were a real treasure trove, the school magazines, because most schools have a magazine that they set up. And in the end I digitised a lot of those, so they were put on the web while I was there.
So this was fairly, technology was reasonably advanced by the time you were doing it?
Well, when I began it, I got help from Ian Matheson, the archivist.
Oh, yes,
here,
City Archivist.
And he set me up, and I went to a few courses. So I set up my own scheme, because it's not like libraries, archives. You set up your own categories.
Now, you said you went to some courses. They were running courses for archivists?
Oh, there are some. Mainly in Wellington, because there's a lot of people who do archives. Okay. Not just the main archives in New Zealand. So particularly church groups. Okay. And they have archives. And school archives. So there's a lady there who took me around some of the other school archives that have been set up. And she made it really her mission to help people to do what I was doing, setting up an archive. So I met some fantastic people who helped me, basically.
Did you feel, having done that, there were gaps in, or you set up a system as to what should be collected?
I felt I did it pretty well. The sad thing is it's probably not really been carried on. I was going to carry it on in my retirement, but for various reasons I didn't. I decided it's better to move away from the institution rather than me carry on. For one thing, it's better if you're in an institution to do the archives properly.
That's right.
You need to know what's going on, really. And to take it back to the histories I wrote, I'd say the same with all these histories I've written, that includes the geography field trips. They were all things that I was involved in myself.
Yes.
So I had a buy-in, and also that helped when I was interviewing people. People knew me or knew of me. For instance, the first one in geography, I was... there's very much the physical geographers and the human geographers.
Yes.
But as a school teacher, you have to teach both. But in terms of academia, I was a human geographer. So if I'd just gone in as a human geographer, the physical geographers in various universities would have been very suspicious of me. But because I was a teacher, somehow or other I got that, as I call it, buy-in. Nobody ever refused to be interviewed. And so I, you know, made some inquiries before I went somewhere and got all the permissions done properly, of course. And they all agreed. And it was the same with these as well.
Yeah, because you got two books there that you've written, including Our Tap of College.
So the
1976 to 2015.
Yes, that was the first 40 years. And it was exactly the same with this one.
First four decades for Manuel II Stridus.
So they were very similar. So with the Aotapu one, to get the interviews done, I made a little group, a little club, really, of students. So virtually all the people, apart from one Board of Trustees person that I interviewed on his own, everybody else was interviewed by the students. I was always there. But they did the interviewing. People like the ex-principals, they just loved being with young people again. And the most amazing person that was interviewed, I feel, was John Wall, who was the first principal. He was the foundation principal of our Aotapu College. And he's still alive to this day. He still lives in town. They just thrive with young people around them. They just come alive and really happy to chat away. So that was very successful.
So how did you trained up the young people to do the interviews?
Best I could,
Which involved what? Did they have a list of questions?
List of questions. We'd worked everything out together.
Okay.
It was very much a joint effort. But very much also led by me, because I knew what I wanted to get out of
it. It was a teaching process as well as a history class.
But it was, I mean, totally voluntary. It was a club. It wasn't something that was forced on kids. And then there was one person that didn't really want to be interviewed by me for various reasons. So I got a young teacher who I knew this person liked sort of trained her up a bit, gained a little group of students. And then this person, let's say who it was, was very happy to be interviewed. But I just felt she and I didn't have a very good rapport.
Well, you need to be able to relax.
Stridus was interesting as well, because I'd only ever interviewed one person. Even in the little club, we only ever interviewed one person. So I was getting various people, because I knew the people in the club. Some of the people who'd been in the club previously I had to write to, and these were people I didn't know, but I started with people I knew. And so I asked somebody I knew, and she said, "Oh yes, I'll come along with Kelvin and Alan." And I thought, well, I can't refuse her. So I had these three people. Oh, what do I do? But it worked perfectly.
I like the group thing. It's around the table chat. So you were doing audio recordings?
Always audio. I always audio them.
And what sort of this? When was this? How long ago were you doing this?
The Aotapu one, was done when I was teaching. So it'd be 2013 to 2015, the interviews. And then I wrote it up basically when I retired in 2016 from Aotapu. And then I started Striders in 2018. So luckily, most of the interviews were done just before COVID. Little did I know COVID was going to come. So I'd interviewed virtually everyone just, I can remember doing the one of the last ones here in February 2020. Did it outside. It was a beautiful day.
Yeah. What sort of equipment did you use? Just computer with a microphone? Or?
I always had a microphone, and I just used an app on my phone. With my earlier one, I'd used just a tape recorder, a cassette recorder.
Yeah.
So my technology didn't move. It all worked very well, and some people would fill in questionnaires. Some people just don't like being interviewed, and they prefer to do questionnaires, really. So there were a few like that.
Okay. Mm. So what came out with the history of the school, Howard Tappert College?
Oh, I think the main thing was just the support that the school has given students. It was set up with very much a dean's system, so that there was support right from when students enter in year nine, as we now call it, third form, when it began. They had a male and a female dean to look after them, and the school was divided into about four or five groups.
Well, you mean the male dean looked after the male students and the female?
On the whole, but there was always flexibility within that.
Okay. Yeah.
And that person went through with those students right through the 5 years.
So was there a particular philosophy to the school there?
Yes, it was very much expanding a child's learning to the very best of their ability.
Okay.
And that may be a high flyer, the person who's actually going to come here later today. He was became a dux of the school and went on to be a physics lecturer. Or we have a huge special needs area in the school as well,
because
the Arapuni school ended up going and was integrated in with Awatapu College in the mid-1990s.
What was that?
That was for children with various intellectual and physical disabilities.
Okay.
And then...
quite different from the Alphony Primary School.
Yes. It backed on Savage Crescent. It was a different area.
Yeah, okay.
And in the 1990s, when those schools were being disestablished and children had the opportunity to be mainstreamed, they became part of Awatapu College.
Okay.
And so you get this massive range of students, but for every student, you try and expand them to the best of their ability. And one of the things in the early days was they actually didn't have a dux at the school or anything to begin with. As long as you had done pretty well in one or two subjects or other things, maybe sport or maybe a cultural, you got an achievement certificate.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the end of the year, if you got mentioned in about four of these, you got this presented to you at an assembly. But most children would have got an achievement certificate in something. So the idea was that it was a kind of level playing field. There weren't too many
high flyers.
Yeah.
Okay. So was this linked to, I know New Zealand, they talk about tall poppies. Was it sort of trying to avoid that?
Probably, yes. And it's interesting because the second principal, Mike O'Connor, who had actually been the deputy in the first few years of the college, and then he went to be the principal of QEC, and then he came back as principal of Awatapu, he didn't really like that flat system. So he introduced a duck system and a few cups and awards, special awards. But the original philosophy of the school had been this flat system. But still, certainly as long as I was there and was writing the book, that idea of the certificate still went on right to the end. And so, the students who helped me, they would have got a certificate for being part of that group and being helpful members of that group throughout the year, the previous year or previous two years.
Okay. Mm. So, but I suppose each of the schools in Palmerston North would have distinguishing features, because yours, I suppose, boys high and girls high, maybe the focus would be on more traditional and academic.
Very much so, yes. I've taught at Girls High as well. Also an excellent school, and thoroughly enjoyed being there. It was more like the school I'd attended myself in England, which was an all-girls, academic school.
Yeah.
And I must admit, the teaching of some of your top students is still, to me, the finest thing for me as a fairly academic person. Yeah.
I think that there's maybe the issue, when you've got that sort of focus, your top stream there, you don't have to get them to want to learn. They've already got the interest, and it's just imparting the knowledge. But was there a difference in the nature of the pupils at Ellitapa?
Well, to begin with, the school wasn't streamed, and that was something else, so there was no streaming. So, yes, it did make a different mix. And my subjects of social studies in the junior school and geography in the senior school, it doesn't matter really if students aren't streamed. Some subjects like maths, I think it matters more.
Yeah.
But I actually thrived on this mixed ability. Yeah. But, I mean, I also liked having a stream class at Girls
It's not
High.
Just ability, though, is it? It's sort of focus on learning. Is discipline more of a problem if you...
I think a little bit, but as long as you get students interested, there's not usually discipline problems. So as long as you can maintain that interest
And your subject area was one that students would find
on the whole they find is interesting. I mean, there's always, like any subject, there's some things that aren't. But I remember I was teaching government. It was, well, that was actually back at Girls High 2016. I was there, and I thought, oh, government is always a bit of a dry subject. But it happened to be the year of the elections in the US with the Trump-Clinton elections. And so they were fascinated by this, because there was a possibility of the first woman being president at that time. So it was just a mixed ability classes. I had two mixed ability year 10 classes. That was at Girls High, and they were really interested in thought it was a topic they were interested in.
Did you see in writing the history, you saw much in the way of change in the nature of the school, or change in the nature of the pupils? Because obviously you've in 40 years they've gone through more than one generation and different outlooks and values and so on.
Yes, to some extent, but I think that whole ethos of individual students being important and the pastoral nature of the school, that was always there to a huge degree, and I'd say more so than any other school I've taught in. And I have taught in other schools. I've taught at Fielding, and I've taught in schools overseas, because I've taught in Australia and in the UK as well. So I think it was the greatest, and I think that has stayed. And to some extent, students don't change that much, even though some people say they do. I don't really agree with that. I think students are always interested in learning new things. If you approach it right, you'll always get the rat bags in the class, and you've just really got to get them on side and try and get them interested as well. There'll always be some people who are better at sport than others.
But there's been changes in sort of social outlook and even big changes in family structure, haven't there?
Yes, and that's certainly true. There's a lot more people from families where it's not a nuclear family any longer. Mum and dad have split up. But I was always a philosophy. I've got kids in front of me. You just teach them. You don't delve too much into their background, because I was a secondary school teacher. You only see a child for an hour a day. And you're not...
They are talking now more about the role of schools in the sort of social work, even needing social workers on the staff.
Yes. Well, I think so. I mean, for many years here has been guidance counsellors. And that's been in New Zealand schools for a long time. And I think they've been have more and more students going to them.
Yeah.
But the deans...
More training or different issues to deal with?
Well, I think they do have different issues. But that wasn't really something I delved into a lot. I never interviewed a guidance counsellor for it.
And the issues of, say, drug use in schools, which seems to have...
Yeah, well...
Or glue sniffing, you would have gone through that phase, did you?
Glue sniffing was even in schools when I first came to New Zealand in 1981. Yes. I can remember having a glue sniffing girl at Girls High, because I happened to be at Girls High then.
Yeah.
So there have been drugs and alcohol in schools for, you know, over 40 years.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I don't think it's changed perhaps as much as some people are saying.
Maybe different, using different things. I suppose smoking might have been more common.
Well, smoking now, it's vaping.
It's vaping.
Ex-colleague of mine was saying, yeah, now they've got vaping at school, you know, and now before it was smoking, and that's always gone on.
Same thing, but just change.
Yeah.
What about discipline then? Did you go into that at all? Because we've...
That was something else that came up, because to begin with, they weren't going to have any corporal punishment. Mm-hmm. And then for a little while it was brought in, and there's a lot of people were very against it as Awatapu. So it only lasted 3 or 4 years in about the mid-1980s.
Yeah. That's because I've been surprised finding people who went to school here, the amount of physical discipline here compared to my experience in the UK. It seemed far more common. So a school that went against that early on is in, because obviously it's not allowed now. But
they tried to make themselves different from the start, Awatapu.
Okay.
So when they began in 1976, they had their own board, whereas the other schools, which was Girls High, Boys High, Freiburg and QEC, they were run by the high school board. So right from the start, they set up as a separate entity with their own board of trustees.
So the high school board was a central, Ministry of Education?
Department of Education.
Okay.
In those days.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
We're going
back
to the 1970s. And then, of course, that changed for all schools in 1989, when the Tomorrow Schools was brought in by the government. But
Awatapu was allowed to have a different structure?
Yes, they allowed them to have it.
So that was the guinea pig for the whole...
Maybe. The first principal brought up was some of the parents didn't want uniform.
Yes.
Now, of course, we have a high school in New Zealand, Onslow College, they don't have uniform. But most New Zealand secondary schools have uniform. Mm. And he really wanted uniform. He felt it's more of a level playing field if you have a uniform. So he went along to, I think it would have been Collinson and Cunningham or one of these outfitters. And he said, oh, I'd like a green uniform. He said, well, you can't have green, sorry, sir, because St. Peter's have just got opened and they've got a green uniform.
Yeah, I think it was Gillespie's that did the school uniform.
Well, it could have been, yes.
Anyway. Yeah.
And so they said, what you're wearing is, you know, I think that would be suitable. And it was right in the middle of the 1970s, so John Ball was wearing brown and yellow. So that's why they had the brown and yellow from the beginning. They found a school that had a uniform somewhat similar, I think it's up in Hamilton, managed to get a few of these uniforms.
Yeah.
And John Ball had this big, like an assembly, really, at Monrad. Most of the students were coming from Monrad. So the parents were there and some students who would be coming to Awatapu the following year. So this was towards the end of 1975. And he dressed four students in smart mufti and four students in this uniform. And they paraded these students like a fashion parade.
Then
at the end of it, they said, what would you like? We'll have a vote. Hands up for the mufti, and a few hands went up. Hands up for uniform, and they all whooshed their hands up, he said. So that's the kind of thing that's here in the history, because he said that at the interview, and it was recorded, and was ad verbatim. I put it down here.
And that book's available in the
book itself is not available in the library, but it's all, the PDFs are available through Manawatu Heritage.
Oh, so it's on the website.
It's on the website.
Okay.
The other way around with this one, that's available in the library, but I still have to get permission from the committee of Striders to get it put on the website. I thought I'd give them a year or two so that then they can sell a few copies and then put it on the website.
Okay, so when you it was published by the school or you just printed
it? No, this was printed at Massey, actually. So that's okay. Printed at Massey.
Yeah.
And that one was printed in town.
So the Stridles.
They arranged all the printing of it. But all the putting together was done by my husband and myself. So all the layout and everything like that was
that
done.
For both of them? Or?
Yeah. Okay. So, and all the... a lot of the photos had to be re-edited because some of them had to be turned into black and white because the colours were not... We just couldn't get the colours right.
Oh, okay.
And some of the colours came out okay, but some of them, the film had deteriorated so much.
Yes.
So I remember that one was a very pink one.
Yes, because a lot of yours would have been the old-style film rather than digital.
Yes. Up to 2000s, really.
Yes.
And then we got, and he's still there, I think, a very good art teacher who took absolutely brilliant pictures. So for the last few years, we had amazing pictures that Keith Dobson, the art teacher, had taken.
Yes.
And they were digitised.
Nice,
they were digitised.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's always a selection that you do.
Okay. And then they'll get someone else to do, if that's the first 40 years, there'll be someone doing the first 50 years.
Well, it won't be me.
you need
another approach.
Actually, isn't it? Next year.
I don't think it'll be done, but we'll see.
No, it can be a lot of work for the updating.
It took me 4 years. Each of those took me 4 years.
Then spare time. And
it was the same as a PhD thesis, really. It was exactly the same amount of time, I'd say.
That's a lot of work. So, labour of love.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programmes can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programmes is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.